ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेस्ताय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निविशेष शून्यवरिपश्चरणे ओम ज्ञान तिमरंदस्य गणंजनशलकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. So I'm offering my obeisances to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who is so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was standing in the midst of darkest ignorance. So this evening we have Bhagavad Gita, a verse from chapter 8. Chapter 8 is called Attaining the Supreme. This is text number 6, which Krishna tells us about the time of death. So translation. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Now I'll read a purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body, thinking of Krishna, attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharata, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so, in his next life, he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one to be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam jajati ante kalevaram tam tam evaiti konteya sadatat bhava bhavataha. So whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Krishna here is talking to Arjuna, Konteya, which is a matronymic named after his mother, means son of Kunti. This is on a battlefield. So mention of the time of death is particularly appropriate because a battlefield is where a lot of people die in the course of events. Although we should not think that we are safe here. Well, we may think that I don't have to worry about the time of death until I'm old. Srila Prabhupada defined old age as just before you die. So is there anyone here who is sure they're not old? So it can come and does come at any minute. Let me read this is in the middle of two other verses that are about the same topic. So let me read all three verses together. You can see what Krishna is saying. So text 5. And whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. In the next text, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the very same and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Well, that's the context of this verse. He's urging Arjuna, even while he's engaged fighting on a battlefield, still simultaneously to think of Krishna. That's why Prabhupada says the best way to do that is to always be chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There are times, of course, where we set aside, where that's all we do is chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes we sit down with our beads and we chant the Hare Krishna mantra and do nothing else. Or we come together in kirtan and as a group we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. But actually, we should be chanting all the time. What else are you going to do when you're driving in your car down the highway? You should be chanting Hare Krishna. Do you like to sing in the shower? You should sing the Hare Krishna mantra. And actually, if you chant Hare Krishna in kirtan and in japa, the tendency will be that you will be chanting Hare Krishna anyway. It keeps popping into the... It should be the song you cannot get out of your mind. Because death can come at any minute, and it's better to be thinking of Krishna. So that's a particularly the easiest way to remember Krishna, is to always be chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. In my early career as a devotee, when I first moved in the temple, I lived in a room with many other men. And I used to wake up at night and I would hear people chanting in their sleep. So that's really good. That's what you want. Because here Krishna is saying, this is a law of nature, at the time of death, one leaves his body. And then whatever our mentality is at that time determines where we shall go next. This is called, the idea here is of transmigration of the soul. The living entity is eternal, but is always changing bodies. Well, I think people call it reincarnation. Srila Prabhupada always preferred the word transmigration to reincarnation, because Krishna points out in this Bhagavad Gita early on in the second chapter that we're transmigrating right now. He says to Arjuna to explain to him how it is I can change my body and remain the same person. Krishna says, you're already doing it. Even in this life, the body you started out with was about this big. You had an infant's body, then a toddler's body, then a young man's body, middle-aged body, old person's body. So you've already drastic changes of body, and mentality too, for that matter. So we're already changing bodies, and yet we remain the same experiencer of all those bodily changes. We are the same consciousness, the same witness that is there for all those changes of body and changes of mind. So he says, if you can understand that, what's the difficulty of understanding that when this body is finished, you take another one? And then later on in the 15th chapter, Krishna again turns to this subject. He says, this is starting with verse 7, the living entities, by living entities we mean the embodied souls, The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. My soul is part and parcel of Krishna, although small. Are my eternal fragmental parts. Krishna uses the word amsha, which means a particle. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. That is the five senses for acquiring knowledge plus the mind, called six senses. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. Thus he enjoys a particular set of sense objects. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So those are a few statements Krishna makes about this. He uses the example just like the air carries aroma. So at the time of death, our gross body is dropped off. But if we are have material desires or material inclinations of different types, we retain the mind or the subtle body and get another gross body attached that fits that subtle body just like a glove fits on a hand. It's molded to our mentality. If you want to know why there are so many species of life on this earth, insects, animals, they're all the expressions of different mentalities. Next time you look in a dog's face, you should understand that's a dog. And that if my mentality has become like that of a dog, or if I'm the sort of person that I have a yard and some stranger crosses my yard and I jump up on my porch and I run, get out of my yard, get out, go, go, go. Just like a dog runs, you know, when he has his little territory. And when you cross into his territory, go, ow, 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 you know. So if I become like that, if that's my mentality, then that state I will attain at the time of death. Or if I have become a dog lover, that's also dangerous. Pet lovers, heed this warning. We also love animals because we understand that they're our brothers and sisters. We love them better than most people. But if your deepest attachment is to your dog or your cat, you could also attain that state. So the person on his deathbed, and all he's thinking about is Fido, Fido. Who's going to take care of Fido? Who is going to walk Fido? Somebody will walk him. Because, and Prabhupada here mentions this cautionary tale involving Bharat Maharaj. I'll tell the story because you all may not be familiar with this. Maharaj Bharata was a great saintly king. And at a certain point, he gave up his kingdom and went to the forest to practice, renounced the world and all worldly activities, left behind everything, and went to the forest to practice renunciation, austerities, yoga, and so on. So he became a very advanced devotee of Krishna. He was actually feeling symptoms of ecstasy. But at one point, when he was near his ashram by a river, gathering some water, there was also a pregnant a doe, a female deer, drinking water at the river. And suddenly nearby a tiger roared. And the doe jumped up in fright and started in fright and lit across the river, ran across, I guess it was shallow. But the doe was pregnant. And at that point, when she jumped up in fright, she gave birth to the little baby deer. But the mother ran off, and so there was this abandoned, cute little fawn. So Bharat Maharaj said, well, this helpless poor little animal is here. It'll, you know, be destroyed in no time at all. Let me take care of him. So somehow or other he managed to take care of this little fawn, and it got a little bigger, and he grew very attached to this deer, and used to think of it as cute. It was very cute, you know, with those big doe eyes and that little soft velvety nose and little hoofs and everything. It was cute. So he began to like this animal and become a little attached. Not a big attachment. Otherwise he was very advanced, but his attachment was such that while he was performing his religious duties, sometimes he would think about the animal. How is he doing now? Is he all right? And so on. So anyway, one evening, the animal would go out and wander around the ashram, and the animal was not there. It had disappeared. And so he became very, very worried and very upset. Where's my deer? And night fell, the deer didn't come back, so he went out in the night to search for the missing deer. So while he was searching through the woods and it was very, very dark, Maharaj Bharata stumbled over the edge of a cliff, and when he struck bottom head first, and he died. So that's why his next birth was as a deer. He had the image of that deer firmly imprinted in his mind. But he said he was a different kind of a deer, because otherwise he was spiritually very advanced. So even though he had a body of a deer, he was still able to retain a human level of consciousness. So he had to spend a lifetime as a stag. And during that lifetime, where sages would congregate in the forest and discuss transcendental topics and chant, that stag was there all the time. Then, when he gave up that body, he took another human birth, and at that point, he was so advanced in spiritual realization. He was so absorbed in transcendence that he chose not to do anything. So everybody thought he was mentally retarded. He was extremely advanced, but anyway, he went through many adventures better than Forrest Gump, that are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, he was going to be offered in sacrifice to Kali by some people, and he was recruited to carry a king's palanquin. Great stories in Bhagavatam, but anyway, he went back to Godhead. But he had to spend, because he was thinking of that deer at the time of death, he had to take that body. So we have to be very careful. Where do we want to go? What do we want to become? And unfortunately, most people this day and age, although we have human bodies, we are living like animals. And so the chances are we will go back down. We have come to the human form of life by evolving upward through up the phylogenetic scale. There's a kind of chain of our hierarchy of beings. And we've come up to that by a kind of automatic progression. And we have come to the human form of life. Now there's a further progress to be made. Actually, the human life provides us an exit point out of the whole cycle of birth and death. In Sanskrit, this is called samsara. Mrityu samsara vartmane, walking on the path of repeated birth and death. Because the soul changes, you take another birth, you grow up, go through whatever you go through, you die again, take another birth, die again, take another birth, die again, go through the whole thing. You go through this, there's birth, there's growth, there's enduring for some time, producing some offspring, dwindling, and dying. These are the six cycles of a living entity. They all do this. And that's what all of us have been doing for a very, very long time. That's what Krishna is telling us. We've been going through this. All of the souls in this room are very old. We are ancient. The soul is described as Purana, very old. Because we're all eternal. And we've been in this material world and we are very experienced. So this human form of life, if you consider of course we're worried about the size of the human population on this planet, but if you consider the population of all living entities, including microscopic living beings, including plants, including insects, including animals and birds, you can see that the human population is tiny. We human beings are a minuscule proportion of the living beings on this planet. And so the living beings that actually attain the human form of life are very few. And then most of us waste it. At least in this age, we waste it. Because we live like animals. What does it mean to live like an animal? It means to engage in four activities and nothing more. Those activities are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending yourself. This is basically what the animals do. They've all got some arrangement in nature to eat. I've seen a lot of people now, they watch on television, the Discovery Channel or Channel, there's nature programs. They look like nature porn to me, but they all show the disgusting things that how the animals eat, how they defend themselves, and how they mate, you know. So everybody knows what goes on in the animal species of life. People have these revolting ways of doing things. But anyway, human beings, they have their arrangement for sleeping. I mean, they have their nests or their burrows or their lairs or... And they have their arrangements for eating. I mean, the spider makes these webs which catch insects, and they've all got some claws or fangs or something to eat. So they have some resting place, and they have some arrangements for eating, and they've all got some, you know, sometimes very elaborate mating methods. By which they manage to reproduce themselves in all kinds of odd, weird, and different ways. And then they can defend themselves against prey. Either they're aggressive aggressors and they've got fangs and claws, or else they blend in with the landscape or something. They have a way of protecting themselves and defending themselves. So here we are. We are now glorious, advanced 20th century human beings. And what are people doing? Well, if you look, you'll see. They sleep. Yes, sir, we've got air-conditioned bedrooms, Sealy posturepedic mattresses, air beds, ion generators, and white sails tell us how many different kinds of coverlets cover. So big arrangements are there for sleeping on wonderful kinds of various sorts of beds, mattress, bedrooms, and so on with the nice pharmacology of sleeping aids to help us out on that matter. So sleeping we do in our advanced and polished way, and for eating, well, you know, you take the restaurant guide and see what you can do, and go into the supermarkets. You've got supermarkets with computerized checkout counters, and food stuff comes from all over the world in containerized cargo, and such a wonderful thing. You can eat whatever you want, whenever you want it, whatever time you want it, and order it by phone, and it comes already cooked. So there's so many wonderful and elaborate methods of eating. And then also, of course, we hardly need to discuss mating, which includes the whole industry of clothing, especially for women, but also now men, and jewelry, cosmetics, and the like. The mating industry is huge. Most of Hollywood is part of the mating industry, as well as nightclubs and so on. That's mating. We don't even have to talk about those people that are now known as